Blog Talk Radio.
This is a Sound Health Options Show with Richard Talk To Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Richard. Wonderful to hear your voice.
Thank you.
Wonderful to have an audience on such an incredible show that we're going to be doing today. We'll tell you a little bit more about this. I'll tell you a little bit now. It's an intriguing guest. He's been forced to be aware of illegal actions perpetrated on prisoners, yet he was punished with prison himself for revealing that the U.S. government is far from humane and far from the war statutes that they agreed to preserve. So he is John Haraku. His book, Doing Time Like a Spy, How the CIA Taught Me to Survive and Thrive in Prison. I think this is absolutely incredible. I have some questions I want to ask him about what's really going on with the U.S. government, but we should let you know that we are not simultaneously broadcasting as we usually do. Maybe people have become used to that now. On Sundays, we are not doing a video. We do videos for our Tuesday shows, and I forget which is coming up. I think neuroplasticity or something equally amazing, so people can watch the show as we do demonstrations. Richard is running the board. He's the director and co-host, master herbalist, all-around good person. Somebody I can call a friend, and there's few really good friends that I have, so I really appreciate you, Richard. And
thank you.
You are what you do for the show. Lost my train of thought there, even. We're being sponsored by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health, and want to remind you that we do have two-day courses that we have started to charge for. They've been free, but the next one coming up, I think, is neuroplasticity, how to test your brain. But we've had to charge for them because we're now giving away microphones and software and other things. But possibly we can give you the money back if you take the five-day course. I just now thought of that. The office will probably kick me for doing it, but that'd be a good idea. We'll just give you your money back if you take the larger course. We're doing a big project on fibromyalgia on our portal, soundhealthportal.com, and they are doing free evaluations for anybody who thinks they have fibromyalgia. That's a good deal. Those, if they had them done with me, it costs $250. So if people want to jump on the portal, and we've demonstrated that before, they can ask for an evaluation about fibromyalgia. So I love that idea with it.
I have to jump in. Sorry for the interruption, but really, for people who haven't, you've been on possibly other shows and you've seen Sherry run a chart, and where you record it and then you run it through one thing and then you do it over here and then you move it over there, and it looks, well, it is kind of complicated, but it looks complicated. The portal is amazing to me because you make a recording on your local computer using a free piece of software, and you just, that's it. And then you log into the portal and you upload it, and you have this amazing array of information without any other setup. It's, I'm very excited about the portal. I think it's a breakthrough technology.
We've
I think it will change.
Yeah, we we've done 3 or 4 things for you, haven't we already?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's always so easy and fast for you to, you know, upload a, you know, either I record it when we're doing shows. Sometimes Sherry will use me as the target or the sample, and we'll just record it. And then, and once you have it, you just upload it, and it's, then it's there. And then you have all this amazing software that you can look at. But in this case, I think taking the fibromyalgia sample, don't think of that as, don't limit it to thinking about fibromyalgia. The software is targeted toward that, but it's going to give you the experience of seeing how easy it is to have information. And it may, because it's looking at a number of factors, it may give you information you weren't expecting. Even though, as I say, it's targeted toward fibromyalgia, all the reports give you some information that's always like, oh, that's interesting to know. At least my experience.
Well, one of the things that we are doing, it's just coming out now, is something on lipodemia. And mostly this is women. Some men have it. But it's called the painful fat syndrome, or lipodemia, really. And you can tell if you have it by running your fingers along the inside of your thigh. And if there are some painful little nodules there, that's a lipodemia, that the body is not ridding itself of fat in its liquid form, and it's forming these fatty globules. And it really is a disease. It's not about weight management. This has been one of my projects for years. We've done, I think, 4 or 5 different projects on weight loss or weight management, and everybody deals with weight in a different way. And within the month, probably this week, we are going to be releasing the information about lipodemia, and you'll be able to go online and see if you're afflicted with it. Oprah's afflicted with it. Kirstie Alley, Kim Kardashian. We've done their voices, and they all have this inability to lose weight and keep it off. So we're really happy that we're going to be able to provide this free to the world. There's, I think, about 17% of women, and that's a lot, 17% of women have this disease. So that makes me happy. We're not sure whether our guest has called in or is coming in. We have sent him an email that came back as address unknown. We'll try again with that to see what's happening. If not, we do have a video that neither Richard nor I have listened to, so we're not exactly sure what is going on here. Usually our guests are confirmed. Do you have any word on your end, Richard?
I don't see anything yet. I have a couple of announcements. Should I do those while we're seeing if he appears?
Yeah.
Okay. One of them I tried to pick because yesterday was Earth Day, although, hey, every day is Earth Day. We're here. This is Earth. We should be kind. Two, I thought good examples of positive motions. One of them is Britain is set to have its first coal-free day since the Industrial Revolution. So the late 1800s, Britain is going to have its first coal-free day. And the UK intends to phase out polluting fossil fuel with plans to switch off its last coal power station in 2025 in order to meet climate commitments. Now, 2025 sounds like, wow, man, that's way in the future. That's 8 years. That's not that far. So that's just a really, I think that's an amazing idea. Solar has become so effective and able to produce energies. That's one of the sources they're going to use to replace that with. And I just think that's a very positive, you know, like, how great is that? Let's produce energy by not polluting. What an amazing concept. And then another one coming from the coal country, the title of the article, I'll put both of these in chat. Mountaintop removal site could become Kentucky's largest solar farm. So in some areas, they do not clear cutting, that's mountaintop removal. And that means they literally take off the top of a mountain and they mine it.
Yes, it looks horrible.
It looks horrible. It's horrible for the environment. It's in every way it's horrible because it's destroying where animals are living and having lives and being part of the support of the ecosystem. And it ruins the terrain because mountains pile up in a way that respond well to weather. And when you do that, you have this flat, stupid surface. So there's a company called the Berkeley Energy Group. Used to be a coal mining company and still owns thousands of acres of land in the area of Kentucky, including an abandoned mountaintop removal site in Pike County, Kentucky, just outside of Pikeville in the heart of coal country. Berkeley Energy is working with the EDF Renewable Energy and former Democratic State Auditor Adam Edlin to build a 50 to 100 watt megawatt farm right on top of that old mine. So that means not only are they be bringing some jobs back to build this structure, because that's quite a large structure, they're also going to be then in the long term, instead of, you know, they're going to take what was formerly destruction by just leaving this flat top mountain, because once they're done, that's it. It's no longer of value. They've gotten what they want out of it, like many of the earth destroyers. They've gotten what they want, and they move on to the next place to pillage. In this case, it'll give it function. And it will allow, you know, amazing energy to be produced that will be non-polluting and comes from the sun. I love that. That's an amazing possibility. I hope that really happens. It's a project in, it's beyond planning. Now it's into approval and getting past the bureaucracy.
Sounds
so
wonderful.
Those are my Earth Day announcements.
Okay, both of them. I want to pick up on something that we talked about last week, and I don't remember which show. We talked about a guy being fined for collecting rainwater on his own property.
Oh, yeah. Becoming illegal to collect rainwater in some states. Yeah.
I belong to the Nexus news feed. I love it. They get political a bit about the U.S., but I love it because they have these articles. And this is one they sent the other day. In the land of the free, meaning America, sustainable living is becoming a crime. Excuse me. It says that they want to fine people for growing gardens on their own land, in their yard. And we talked about an article a couple years ago that in New York they wanted to charge people $50 for growing any kind of plants on their balcony or outside, $50 to have these plants be inspected to make sure that the food you were growing was edible or had the right seeds. And it's just incredible. Vegetable gardening is not even immune from state interference. In Miami Shores, a couple was forced to destroy their front yard garden after government threatened them with a fine of $50 each day the garden remained. Now, that's incredible. We can't have our own water. We can't grow our own food. The government is just getting to the point of ridiculousness about how much it's interfering in our lives. And I don't know in a defiance, that we should all grow tomato plants in our front yard or something that we like to eat. But it's I'm ticked. I will put this article in Richard's chat here so he can chat it to those of you who are on with us at Blog Talk Radio. Okay.
Well, it's really, I think that also part of having grown up in an agricultural state, so I've been around farming, not in it, but around farming, and I've always grown stuff myself. So the idea of somebody coming to me and saying, you can't grow that, that's mind-blowing. I mean, that's what? I mean, rainwater being collected, being illegal, some guy going to, I mean, as I remember, that gentleman went to jail. I think it was in somewhere in Oregon. He went to jail for 30 days for collecting rainwater because they said you couldn't do that. We own that. The government was telling him that they owned that water and he couldn't collect it. Really?
There's got to be something else. Like there's something in the rainwater they don't want us to know about. Something's really just too weird here. Well, our guest has not shown up yet, but we have a video. Do you want to play that from your side? I've not listened to it, so I'm not sure.
I can't do it from this side because of where I'm in Blog Talk Radio. Is it possible you can do it through your connection
with your speakerphone? Find it. Okay, we will try that. Okay, and again, we're not sure. This may be somebody else's radio show. It's up on YouTube. But this is John Hiriku. Did I pronounce his name right?
Hiriku.
And happened?
I was just going to interject that I really want to have John back, so we will get him rescheduled. Because his story is quite amazing from what he did as I'm putting air quotes around whistleblower, and then his whole story of being in prison for it was truly amazing. But go ahead.
You should talk about that. He was an analyst, a CIA analyst, and he witnessed waterboarding, and he felt like that was humane, and certainly it was against the law of what the U.S. had agreed for prisoners. And he reported it to the press because nobody would listen to him. And how long did he spend in jail? A year and a half or something?
30 months.
30 months? Wow.
Yeah.
2 years and something. He asked for a pardon from Obama before Obama left office. And Obama refused to grant a pardon to a person who had reported a wrongdoing by the United States government. You know, that's crazy too. So since we're going to try still to get in touch with him behind the scenes, but let's play a bit of this video so people can be introduced. Anything else you want to add, Richard?
Nope, let's see what this is.
It's 19 minutes long.
Okay.
It is coming up.
Hello, everyone. I'm Shadow Proof's managing editor, Kevin Bastola, and we're joined with John Kiriakou, former CIA officer. And he's been writing at reader-supported news about Jeffrey Sterling's case. So we're talking to him. We want to bring some more attention to what the Bureau of Prisons is doing to Jeffrey. So thanks for joining us, John.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we recently published a letter from Jeffrey Sterling at Shadow Proof, and you've been following what's going on with him in the prison. So for people who aren't aware, I summarize where things are at right now. He's suffering from some very severe heart problems.
Right. Jeffrey has a very long-standing, serious heart arrhythmia that necessitated a hospital stay of more than 4 days about 10 years ago. He was a candidate for a pacemaker immediately before he was incarcerated. He didn't have time to have that pacemaker installed, so he went to prison with his pre-existing heart condition. As you can imagine, his health has deteriorated in prison. I know from firsthand experience that prison health care is dismal at best, and Jeffrey just seems to be experiencing the worst of both worlds, having a pre-existing condition and having to have it treated in prison. And so he's had a series, really, over the last month or so, a series of heart episodes or incidents, I think he's calling them, where he experiences arrhythmia, tachycardia in some cases. He fainted in one case and had to be carried on a stretcher to the medical unit. And he has literally been begging to be taken to an outside cardiologist. for an exam. And the prison refused to approve such an exam until very recently. And even then, when the outside exam was finally approved, after Jeffrey had been shackled hands and feet and taken to this outside medical professional, the prison never gave that doctor his medical records. And so the doctor had no idea what he was examining, no idea what he was supposed to be looking for. And as a result, all Jeffrey ended up getting was a prescription for a beta blocker.
Right, and there's a few problems with that. I mean, one, if you're in shackles, you probably couldn't take the proper tests because you're going to have an elevated heart rate anyways because you're in that sort of condition. And on top of that, what Jeffrey is talking about and describing is symptoms of atrial fibrillation, and the prison is insistent that he does not have this history, it would seem, from what Holly, his wife, has shared. They insist that he doesn't have this serious condition. So would you talk about how the prison is under this, or I guess whether they believe it or not? We don't know if they actually truly believe this or not, but what they're doing publicly is putting on this face that he's fabricating medical information. So would you address that?
Yeah, this is a common tactic used in the Bureau of Prisons. It's called malingering. And if you are determined to be malingering, that is claiming health maladies that you don't have, you are subject to disciplinary action, which includes being committed to solitary confinement, losing your visiting privileges, your telephone privileges, your email privileges. They can really make your life miserable. Now, why would they do that? Well, they do that because they don't want to treat you. They don't want to treat a prisoner that has an expensive health problem because they don't want to pay for it. Now, couple that with the fact that the Bureau of Prisons is a dumping ground for failed medical professionals, and you have just a perfect storm. It is easier for the Bureau of Prisons, and certainly cheaper for the Bureau of Prisons, for a prisoner to die in their custody than it is to treat them over the course of a period of time.
And from your experience, so you were incarcerated for, 24 months? Is that
23 months, yes.
23 months. And your experience in prison probably reflects what Jeffrey said. I mean, exactly at the end of his letter, he wraps up saying, truly, to FCI Englewood and the BOP, the life of an inmate is a cheap commodity.
It is indeed. In the short time that I was incarcerated at FCI Loretto in Pennsylvania, four other prisoners died, and all four of them died of preventable illnesses, a couple of heart attacks and two cases of cancer. In one case, I actually was friendly with the man. He lived in a room that was directly across the hall from the chapel where I worked, and I used to sit at the same table. He and I sat at the same table in the cafeteria, so I would stop by and say hello. One time I stopped by, and he complained to me that his back was just killing him, and he had gone to medical, and they gave him Tylenol, and the Tylenol did nothing. I saw him a week or two later, and he was using a cane. I saw him a week or two after that, and he was using a walker. To make a long story short, I finally went to the chaplain, and I said, "Chaplain, this poor guy is obviously in distress, and medical is not giving him anything other than Tylenol. They won't take him out for an X-ray. They certainly wouldn't pay for an MRI. They just kept giving him Tylenol every time he would go to the medical unit, and they threatened him with a malingering shot." So finally, to his credit, the chaplain went to the head of the medical unit and said, "Please give this guy an exam." They finally took him out to a hospital where he had an X-ray and was found to have stage 4 spinal cancer, and he died just a few weeks later. So, just to put a cherry on top of this whole story, just nights before this poor guy's death, the warden went to his room and said that he would approve a compassionate release if the prisoner signed an agreement to not sue the Bureau of Prisons. And he refused to sign the agreement, and he died in his bunk in prison. That's just typical. of medical care in prisons across the country. This wasn't specific to Loretto. It wasn't specific to this one prisoner. This is what Jeffrey Sterling is up against, and it's not going to get any better.
Right, and it's somewhat chilling when you think about it. I shared with him a story you had put in, or some anecdotes that you had put in your last letter from Loretto, and how you had summarized the problems with medical at Loretto, and I believe you told a story of one prisoner in there who had suffered from something serious, and he came back with, okay, that's normal, and he named this prisoner who he called William and talked about how William had died, and it first from a situation very similar to what Jeffrey is going through right now. So he has this very chilling recent example of what could happen to him. So one other thing that's really critical about Jeffrey's story is that on September 17th, he went and had a meeting with medical, and they're acting like it didn't happen because he was told that he has elevated levels of troponin, which suggests that he probably suffered some kind of a heart attack.
Yes. Yeah, this is also typical of what the Bureau of Prisons medical units across the country will do. It's my own personal belief that the medical staff member, the public health service staff member who examined Jeffrey, purposely did not include a write-up of that appointment in Jeffrey's records, and it is really meant to cover himself in the event that Jeffrey has a more serious heart attack or dies while he's still in prison. You know, I spent 15 years with the CIA, Kevin, and over the course of those years, I had occasion to come into contact many, many times with medical professionals from the U.S. Public Health Service, and I found them to be just terrific people, good medics, committed, patriotic. I had exactly the opposite experience when I was in prison. I was shocked to find that public health service professionals were the physician's assistants that were seeing prisoners, seeing patients every day. These folks were the dregs of the public health service. These were the people who just couldn't cut it anywhere else in government, and so they were dumped into the prisons. And I'll give you another example. When I first arrived at Loretto, we have a doctor about whom most of the prisoners I knew spoke very highly. And about 6 months into my sentence, he resigned. He didn't ask to be transferred. He resigned and went into private practice because he said the Bureau of Prisons would not allow him to treat prisoners the way he wanted to treat them, which meant to send them to outside medical appointments to prescribe the medications that he thought they needed. We had a period of about 6 months with no doctor at all. And then after those 6 months, they hired a failed child psychiatrist who had been asked to leave one of the major teaching hospitals here in the United States. So really, you get the worst of the worst in the medical field. Don't forget that half of all doctors graduate in the bottom half of their class, right? Somebody's got to be ranked last in their class in medical school. And frequently, those doctors end up in prison.
And so on top of all of what you just shared is the duress and stress that you go through as a family member trying to communicate your needs. So Holly, the wife of Jeffrey, has been calling the Bureau of Prisons, trying to impress upon them the need for assistance. And I guess share some of what the Bureau of Prisons has been telling her and how this compares to, well, the way you were handled. But I guess fortunately you were never really in a situation like Jeffrey.
No, I was fortunate. I did have to go to an outside appointment one time because just 1 week into my sentence I broke a finger. And and I did everything the way I was supposed to. I went to medical. I said, I have a broken finger. And the physician's assistant, the PA from the public health service, said, no, it's not broken. I said, listen, I've broken bones before. I'm telling you it's broken. We went back and forth for more than 2 weeks. Finally, 16 days after I broke the finger, he allowed me to go to an outside hospital to have an X-ray. I was shackled, just like Jeffrey. My hands were shackled in front of me. my feet were shackled, so I could only take baby steps, and then my hands and feet were chained to each other. And I got my my x-ray, and the doctor said, well, it's broken. It's broken. But there's nothing we can do it because it's already begun healing itself. And so I'll never regain full use of my finger. It's just a pinky finger. It's no big deal. With Jeffrey Sterling, it's his heart. And these prison officials just don't want to acknowledge the fact that the guy has an illness, a disease that has to be treated, or it's going to get worse, and it may get worse to the point of death. What Holly Sterling has been doing, and I've encouraged this in my own writing at Reader Supported News, is she's been contacting the Bureau of Prisons regional office in Denver, and she has spoken with an official there who was really not helpful in any way, and in fact threatened Holly a couple of times, saying things like, I don't have to speak to you. You know, it's a favor that I'm doing for you, speaking to you. I don't have to tell you anything. I don't have to do anything for your husband. Well, that's not going to help anybody's situation to get into what amounts to a pissing match with the wife of a prisoner. If the guy has a medical problem, then fix it. It's your duty as a medical professional, whether you're in the Bureau of Prisons or not, it's your duty to get this thing taken care of. But they just... they seem to be willing to do only the bare minimum, and that's only when they're pushed. Now, I know from responses to my own pieces on Reader Supported News that about 150 people have called the regional office in Denver to demand medical care for Jeffrey, and I think that it's pissed them off a little bit. Now, perhaps, and I like to think this is the truth, perhaps it's pissed them off enough that it's pushed them into action.
Well, Jeffrey certainly thinks that the only reason he was able to see that outside specialist was because of people calling the BOP. And in conversations with Holly, this is the sort of pressure that they want to keep up. So, you know, coincidentally, I have the numbers right here, and I'll just take a moment. I'll do it again at the end of the interview. I mean, we're almost finished, but... but for the North Central Regional Office, you can dial 913-621-3939, or you can call FCI Englewood, the prison where Jeffrey's being held, and that's 303-763-4300. And so those are the numbers, and it's working because people, you know, I guess talk about what your experience was on the inside, just to emphasize what it was like knowing that people were paying attention to your case. And that is a huge deal, and it gives you a lot of power to protect yourself against prison officials.
I truly believe, and I've written about this, that you and Brian Sonnenstein at Shadow Proof and Jane Hampshire at FireDogLake.com before you, while you were there as well, I believe that you three in particular were responsible for my safety. In prison. And I don't mean my safety vis-a-vis other prisoners. I mean my safety vis-a-vis the prison administration. I was in danger of being put at one point into something called diesel therapy because of my writing and blogging. And it was because you published that allegation. And there were something like 1,600 calls to the director of the Bureau of Prisons demanding that I not be put into diesel therapy that I wasn't. And that the warden, the assistant warden, and most importantly, the guards kept their hands off of me. What diesel therapy is, I'll just say quickly, is if the prison has a troublesome prisoner, they'll put him into what's called transportation status. So that means they'll put you on a bus and send you to a transportation hub. In my case, it would have been the U.S. Penitentiary in Canaan, Pennsylvania. Now, you can sit there for 2 weeks, or you can sit there for up to 6 months. Then they put you on a bus to, let's say, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania Airport, and then they fly you to another transportation hub in Atlanta, Georgia, the penitentiary there. Eventually, you make your way to the central transportation hub in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and then maybe Yankton, South Dakota, or Englewood, or California, or wherever. Anywhere in America, there are so many prisons. The reason they do that, though, is because when a prisoner is in transportation status, he does not have access to a telephone, to an email, or to pens and paper. And it's the only way, really, that they can legally silence someone. And transport status, transportation status, can last up to a year. You can be in transportation status for that long. Well, I only had something like a year left on my sentence. And they were talking about ways to get me to stop writing. I have no doubt in my mind that at FCI Englewood, they have had similar conversations about how to silence Jeffrey Sterling.
I do believe that when I was talking to Holly, she mentioned something about not just Jeffrey, but the entire unit where Jeffrey is being confined, being told that they would lose email privileges, mostly on a whim, just an arbitrary whim that this prison official was upset about something someone did and was willing to take that means of communication away. So it doesn't need, I mean, that's how quickly you can lose your connection. So my last question is the demand right now. It's just to focus on what people should be, if they're interested in supporting Jeffrey and contributing to this outside pressure. What they need to do is impress upon the officials that he needs a certain thing. Holly believes that that demand should be seeing an outside doctor. The prison can't take care of this issue. They've already failed Jeffrey. They will continue to fail him. What do you think about her attitude, especially based on your experience?
Yeah, I think Holly Sterling is exactly on point. The prison has already proven several times that they are either unable or unwilling to help Jeffrey Sterling. The only way that he can be treated properly and appropriately is by an outside specialist, and that's really what we all have to push for.
That is an incredible insight from John Karakou, who was in prison himself, and he is now going to bat for other prisoners. Neither Richard or I knew what this was about, but it's a good teaser, a good background for having John Karakou on with us. And he has called in. Richard, do you want to talk about that a minute? Did we lose Richard? Richard, if you're talking, we cannot hear you.
No, sorry. I had myself muted because I moved some papers. John had called in from his cell phone, and he was just landing in a plane, and he was really apologetic and really wanted to be here, but there was just too much background noise with, you know, he's on a plane trying to, like, I could do it now. No. So he will be back, and he's just a very, you know, he's a really sincere person who just has an amazing, I can't call it adventure because it's gnarlier than that. You know, was a whistleblower in a category that I'm not going to tell you about, so you have to come back. But I mean, really, it was gnarly and under, you know, investigation for almost 4 years. And then he spent 30 months in jail because he was saying, look, this is not legal. And he wasn't supposed to say that because he worked for the agency. It's an amazing story and a good read.
15 days with a broken finger, refused medical help, and now does not have the use of that finger. That is inhumane.
Yep.
And we should talk about the prisons are not government run. The prisons are private prisons that are there to make money, and that's why they're withholding this care.
Yeah, it's a for-profit enterprise. It's less about incarceration than it is, this is my opinion, it's less about incarceration and more about profit centers. It's amazing.
I think John Karakou is a hero, and we are going to be very happy to have him back at any time that he wants to be here. We're going to go ahead and conclude the show a bit early, unless you guys want to listen to a part one that I just found about his there's another 17-minute show if people want to listen to it. What do you think, Richard?
I think We have a pretty good audience. I hate to cut them off, but I think it would be better for us to stop now and have John come back and really talk about his story and the new book, Doing Time Like a Spy.
Yes, his book may be out by then, too, May 11th. I think they said it's coming out. It was due out April 11th. There are several other things on the Internet about him if you want more information. His last name, K-I-R-I-A-K-O-U, Karikou. I'm looking at YouTube, and there are several pieces. It took me a while to find it. I don't know if I had to dig down under other things and get it.
He was well-trained by an agency. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that is trying to hide his story.
Yeah.
I'm going to get the book, and we'll be better prepared next time. The book was due out earlier. That's why we scheduled it at this time. So let's go ahead and close the show a bit early with our apologies from John and from Richard and I that the show did not go on.
Kind of. Not quite as we had expected.
Yeah, which happens often.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Have a great rest of the week. Have a great weekend. And we'll see you on Tuesday. And we're talking about something as always. But I never know. So have a great weekend. Thanks, Sherry. Bye-bye.
Later, people.